This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are more ways to stay in touch with DC 37. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on social media. Call the hotline, 212-815-7555. And if you have any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. The management of New York's hometown newspaper, the New York Daily News, announced last week that it was letting go nearly half of its staff. In an editorial, the New York Times declared, "Painful cuts have become the new normal across journalism, an industry that has struggled to find a sustainable business model amid vast changes in the way Americans consume news." But even in that context, the cuts at the news are too costly to bear. They should ring alarm bells for anybody who cares about the future of New York City. Joining us now to discuss the cuts at the news and the importance of local journalism is Stuart Marks, who has worked as senior staffer at both the Daily News and its competitor, the New York Post. Your last position was senior managing editor, is that correct?
Yes, at the Daily News.
Welcome to State of the Union.
Glad to be here.
Let me start by asking, why does the Daily News matter?
The Daily News matters because it's a good local voice, a hard-hitting voice, a counterbalance to the Post in terms of opinion. And it's just also, it had a terrific sports section. And it matters because it's still a paper of, you know, the outer boroughs. It's still a paper of the working class people, even though its circulation has dropped dramatically. I just think as many voices as possible there should be. And losing that voice, I think, making that voice smaller is a bad thing for New York.
The paper does seem to have found, it's ironically, the paper seems to have found a sort of ideological groove as the anti-Post in recent years. And they've been among the hardest hitting against Trump. Can they continue to do that? Can they continue to be a voice, to be a force at its new size? And how many times has it been downsized over the years? Is this the final nail in the coffin?
Well, I'm afraid that it is the final nail in the coffin. And what's not lost on me is that I was at the News in 1990 when it was owned by the Tribune Company, which now calls itself Trunk.
Right.
And Tribune Company came in basically to kill the unions. And if they had to kill the paper, kill the paper. Fortunately, they provoked a six-month strike. Fortunately, it ended okay. But then the unions were eventually. But if so, to me, it's like, here now, 18 years later, no, 28 years later.
Yeah, right.
No, that's, yeah, my math is fuzzy.
Well, the time has flown.
here now, it's 28 years later, and they're back, apparently trying to finish the job. About their voice on the Trump thing, I mean, editorially, they'll probably... They can do the same. Their edit page did not take any hits. But coverage-wise, I just think that they can continue to try, but it's just not going to be what it was.
Well, when you say editorial-wise, they haven't taken any cuts. To be a powerful voice, you have to be breaking stories. I mean, whether or not your voice matters on the editorial page, you've got to be considered a force on the front of the newspaper. Or So the question becomes, how do you do that at this size? And do you think that there is a plan? And is there any indication based on what they have done elsewhere that there is a plan and that something can be worked out here?
Well, the new editor has already said there is no plan. And he's basically said to the staff, give me 30 days to come up with a plan. Why do you go in and slash a paper by 50%? You don't have a plan after that. You know, I mean, the biggest fallacy in the world is, you know, you can do more with less. You can't do more with less. You do less with less. And they can continue to break some stories out of Washington, but that's not really their strength anyway. I mean, their strength is local. And that voice has really taken hits over the years. I mean, going back to when I started there in 1980, there were 10, 12 people in the Brooklyn Bureau alone, in the Queens Bureau alone. There are similar numbers in the Bronx. And now the bureaus don't exist. They're away with them.
Stewie, what does it mean to not have a bureau? What does it mean to the average reader of the Daily News or the average New Yorker that there are fewer people running around town with a New York Daily News?
Well, it means a lot. I mean, as I said before, it's always been sort of the paper of the outer boroughs. The Post concentrates on Manhattan. The News covers Manhattan, but they concentrate on the outer boroughs, Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx. If you don't have a bureau, the boroughs aren't getting covered. I mean, they went from 12 people in some of those bureaus to 3 or 4, and the coverage was obviously much thinner. The sections going back years were 6, 8 pages or more. They eventually got cut down to 2 or 3, and now they just don't exist. So people in the Bronx and Brooklyn that were able to read about what was happening in their neighborhoods don't get that news anymore.
You posted, I believe it was you who posted, an Adam Lisberg tweet. Adam Lisberg being a former reporter for the Daily News who tweeted, you'd bang on a door in some godforsaken corner of the city and say you were with the Daily News, and out came someone full of life and tears and joy and passion, so grateful that someone cared. And the next day, a million people would care about it, too. Who cares for them now? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
It was a great sentiment. I didn't retweet that. My wife did. But I second that.
Okay.
But he's right. I mean, and the thing is that, you know, it was that way with the news. You know, people did trust the news more than they trust the Post. And that's going to be gone because there aren't going to be that many people knocking on doors.
What about the criticism? I heard Gerson Barrero was on New York One last night talking about the fact that the papers were still being run by white men and that, you know, that did not reflect the diversity of the city. What do you want to talk about that at
all?
Sure.
There's no denying that's the case in large part. In 1980, when I got there, the newsroom was pretty white, you know, almost virtually all white. Over the years, it got a little better. And my last stint there, I made a more conscious effort to make it reflect the community more. I mean, they didn't even have any native Spanish speakers to speak of. I mean, they had a couple who were on the Spanish section. But, you know, and I had a couple of kids who could speak Spanish because they learned it in college. But I made an effort to hire native Spanish speakers. So it absolutely should, but it doesn't. There's no question that it doesn't accurately reflect it. But I'm not sure any newspaper actually reflects, in an urban area, actually reflects the population.
And
they should, but they don't.
And what about print? I mean, I was on the, I take the train to work every morning, and every morning I'm one of the few people carrying a print copy of either the Daily News or Newsday or the Post. Do you think that newspapers can survive online, or do you think that newspapers can survive as newspapers?
Well, I don't think a newspaper can survive online for very long. I don't know what the situation is now, but a couple of years ago, I was in Seattle right after the Post-Intelligencer went paperless. And I was at a newsstand buying another paper, and a local person came up and asked for the Post Intelligencer. And the newsstand dealer said, oh, they went out of business. Well, they didn't go out of business. They were online, right. But for all practical purposes, they were out of business because you couldn't pick them up anymore.
And is this a general? Is this a generational thing, maybe? I mean, my daughter does not deal with the physical copy of a newspaper. My daughter is, who's 24 years old, is looking at things online and what her friends are posting on Facebook. Now, I'm not asking you to answer the problem that clearly is out there as a big problem about money, but what this means to communities and how people get their news and how people understand what their issues are and how they're being addressed, as we've said now a couple of times, it really does affect whether or not the quality of life in this city is better. If you shine a light on the problems, you're hoping that those problems are going to get solved. If there ain't no light on those problems, nothing is being done.
Right. Well, I think the Washington Post slogan is democracy dies in darkness. And my slogan for this would be that corruption thrives in darkness. Because there's nobody there to say, hey, these guys are pulling the wool over your eyes, or these guys are doing something that's hypocritical. And you don't have that voice anymore. The one great thing, and in New York, it's happened not just to the Daily News, but to everywhere. DNA Info, which closed a couple of years ago, was great in that respect because they covered the things that nobody else covered. They went to community board meetings. They went to those local things, and they broke stories because it wasn't on anybody else's radar screen yet.
Right.
I can't tell you how many times I would shout over to the people who were running on the desk, and do we have this? This is a great story. But they're not there anymore, And I think that has happened consistently over the years. And it's bad for local. I mean, when I started at the news 38 years ago, but when I started there, aside from having all those people in the boroughs, they had a bunch of people, a gang of people at City Hall. They covered not only transportation and education, which they still do, but they covered housing and health and hospitals. And, I mean, every beat imaginable, ACS, which was called, I think, the Bureau of Child Welfare then, they covered all those agencies. Nobody covers agencies anymore, except for transportation and education.
I knew this was going to go by too quickly. 12 minutes are up. Stuart Marks. Stuart Marks is the former senior managing editor at the New York Daily News. He's now president of Marks Communications. I want to thank you for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Welcome back to State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. Joining us now by phone is Alisa McBride, who was recently and overwhelmingly elected Secretary Treasurer of DC 37's National Union AFSCME at the union's 43rd convention in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome back to State of the Union.
Hi, Chris.
Let me begin by offering congratulations on what was a rather formidable victory there you had.
Well, it was a fabulous convention, and lots of wonderful folks came together to make important decisions for our union. So it was great to be part of it.
Let's take a step back and talk a little bit about why AFSCME regularly holds a national convention and what the goals are, and talk about this year's convention.
Yeah, I was going to ask if I could say a word about that, because I know a lot of your listeners are AFSCME members and family and community members who know and work with AFSCME members. And this is an important event for us. It's every 2 years. It's the highest decision-making body within our union. So it's a chance for leaders and members and activists to come together from across the country. It was about 5,000 folks in Boston. And they all do public service work in different cities and towns and counties and states, and for private sector companies that provide public services across the country. So it's a chance for people to be in solidarity with each other from all over our nation and all over our union, and to set policy for the union, to make decisions about the union's direction, about the union's leadership. And it's really the foundation of our union's democracy. So it's an important event. And for those who are listening who would like to hear more, you can find out who went to represent you through your local union president or steward. They can connect you with the delegates to our convention from your local.
This year's convention was held just weeks after the U.S. Supreme Court's controversial and very wrong decision in Janus v. AFSCME, a case that was really nothing more than a blatant political attack on the rights of public employees to come together and collectively bargain wages, benefits, working conditions, etc. What was your take on the mood of the convention and the folks who attended the convention?
My conclusion is that people are clear that a lot is at stake right now, not just in terms of our union, but in terms of economic justice in our country, in terms of workers' rights, in terms of public services. And what I felt was a real resolve on the part of AFSCME leaders that we are the front lines of this fight for public services and workers' rights and economic justice. And I would say that I saw a lot of serious stiffening of backbones in that room and heard a lot of passion about taking on the fight and continuing to be in solidarity with each other and to raise our voices for what's right in this country. And you were there too. I know you probably felt it as well. There's as our president, Lee Saunders, would say, folks are ready to rumble. This is not a fight we're going to walk away from.
I was impressed by the number of folks who were there for the first time. You really had a sense that there was that something has happened over the past couple of years, and that there's a new energy coming from new people.
I think that's right. And in fact, as a result of the Janus decision, the very wealthy corporate right wing is funding organizations that are trying to persuade people to drop their union. And despite that, despite money being thrown at these organizations from the likes of the Koch brothers and the Walton family and the Bradley Foundation.
And these are folks, let's be clear, the people that you just mentioned, they do not like unions. They do not want unions. They believe that unions are bad for the country. They believe that the right to collectively bargain is bad for the country. And they're out there now taking this decision. And I interrupt you. Continue.
But for a very simple reason, right? They want to accumulate more wealth and power for themselves at the expense of working folks. So their funding, along with a lot of other horrible things going on in this country, they are funding an attack on workers' rights by inviting people to drop their union. Despite that, what we heard from leaders across the country is that the number of non-members choosing to join the union for the first time has outnumbered the folks who dropped out of the union by 2-1.
That's great.
So that's a sign that folks are saying, wait a second, if the boss and the very wealthy corporations are telling me to drop out, that I don't need a union, that I should not stick together with my coworkers, maybe it's time for me to do just that. And that's the energy and spirit that I think was really present in that convention hall last week.
And I just, we need to make it clear to our listeners who are members that there are folks, as you say, who are spending a lot of money, and they're not coming at it as a fight. They're now coming at it as we're helping you build your union stronger by telling you to leave it. You know, I mean, it's a weird Twilight Zone world. Members of DC 37, we know, have received an email. We don't know how they got the email addresses at work from this organization here in New York that is, you know, claiming it just wants to improve the union. These are folks who want to bust the union. And and we just, I just want to take this opportunity on this show to make it very clear to our members that there's going to be stuff coming at them saying, you know, you have a choice, but to not be fooled by who these folks are who are coming at you.
Yeah. If you want a voice on the job and the chance to bargain and negotiate for a better life for yourself and your family, then your only choice is to stick with the union. But the other side is they have some seriously deep pockets. And these are the same folks who are attacking voting rights, you know, funding the attack on civil rights, funding the attack on public transportation in this country. I mean, this is a bad group of folks. And they have one agenda, which is to line their own pockets. And one way they can do that is by weakening workers' voice on the job. And that's all these drop campaigns are about. So it's a good thing for people to know it's coming at you.
Right, right. Listen, there was a poll taken. I saw a poll from Midwest states saying that Trump's numbers are down. As we talk about going into the midterm elections, how important that's going to be and coming out of the convention and focusing on the midterm elections, how big a priority is that from the national union's perspective?
Well, it's a huge priority to make sure that people get out to vote and are engaged in the local races that matter so much. I mean, for AFSCME members, the city council, the school board, the county executive, those are the races that matter most. And one thing that's happening is that many folks are stepping up to run who have never run for office, union members, working people, women who have really felt like the country's going in the wrong direction, and somebody's got to step up, so maybe it's my turn. So we're seeing a record number of AFSCME members, union members, and especially working women decide to run for the first time. So that makes this election not only really important, but also an opportunity to have more folks like us representing us in all levels of government. So we see this election as hugely important, and I know you've got important races there in New York, but you're also next door to a couple states with critical races, Pennsylvania and Connecticut. So I'm hoping that DC 37 folks who are amazing organizers turn out your own folks, but also help your sisters and brothers in the union in Pennsylvania and Connecticut win their important elections this fall.
And going back to the convention for a moment, the number of ways in which the national union connects with locals and with delegates in terms of providing information and training and how to, you know, how to run for office, how to organize. I mean, what are the priorities going to be in the months ahead, months and year ahead, in terms of what we need to do to keep in a post-Janus world on our game?
Organizing, organizing, organizing.
And then some more organizing.
Yeah, exactly. And important to note that there's a lot of resources on AFSCME.org and on the AFSCME Facebook page. And I have my own Facebook page as the Secretary Treasurer of the union called AFSCME Elisa. We have Facebook groups for librarians and EMTs and other professional sectors within AFSCME to connect with their sisters and brothers across the union. There's a lot of online resources. So that's the work, is to organize and also to continue to serve our communities. One of the most moving moments at the convention was our Never Quit Award, which is where we recognize the public service that members of this union are so passionate about. And this year, the Never Quit Award went to a member leader of the union from Puerto Rico named Ana Candelario, who was incredibly involved and still is in hurricane relief on the island of Puerto Rico, not only dealing with her own challenges, having lived through that, but also trying to make sure the people she serves as a public worker in Puerto Rico, that their needs are met, but also just going above and beyond for her own community and doing a ton of volunteer work. And so she actually received the award from her 11-year-old son who came up to convention. And I can only speak for the moms in the room. There was not a dry eye among us when that 11-year-old child presented a Never Quit Award for public service to his mom. But she reminded us what this is all about, which is that we believe in being there for each other within the union and within our communities. And that's what we're going to continue to do at work, in our towns, and in our nation as a whole.
You know, we take for granted, we just have a few seconds left, we take for granted the first-time delegates from DC 37 were just amazed at the commonality of issues across the country. They were really quite, and they spoke about this quite eloquently, about really getting to see up close how we're all in the same boat.
That's right.
And how much this all comes together.
And we need to row in the same direction.
That's right. That's right. Elisa McBride is the Secretary Treasurer of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. It is always a pleasure to have you on this show. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
All right. Thanks to you and to all the wonderful public service workers there in New York City.
All right. Take care, Elisa.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's just about all the time we have for this evening. Before we go, I want to make a couple of announcements. DC 37 members will soon be receiving in the mail a packet from the union that includes information on the recent tentative contract agreement with the city. That will include a ballot. Please look over the material carefully and vote. The ballots must be sent back by mid-August. If you want more information about that, please go to the DC 37 website, www.dc37.net. Also, the DC 37 Education Fund will be offering fall courses at Union Headquarters. To find out more, visit www.dc37.net/benefits/education. And finally, the Municipal Employee Legal Services at DC 37 reminds you that they provide legal representation to members who are applying for citizenship. For more information, call 212-815-1818. If you have any comments about this or any of our programs, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The producer for this show is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Monocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.